have to keep this show a certain level of crapness so that it doesn't get too popular and then it doesn't get too expensive, right? It's just, it's very simply.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. So, should we crack on? I've kicked off the recording. It's the standard drill. What I've got on the stream is some learning aids, I guess, which is basically, mm-hmm. So we've got the family tree, which I don't think they've updated since season one. We've also got the actual Game of Thrones cast and characters, which also I don't think they've updated since season one. It's 2 years, guys, 2 years. And then I've got the interactive map of Game of Thrones, which I don't think's been updated since like season seven of Game of Thrones, right? So,
I just remember when they had the interactive maps, they released House of Dragons season one. It took them like, they did like a 4 day turnover.
That was great, yeah. Now, yeah, we'll be lucky for a four year turnover.
Those people got laid off.
Yeah,
no, I mean a four day turnover is in when they updated all of the information.
Yeah,
just remember, like
the people working on that HBO said, "Okay, we don't need you," which sucks.
Yeah,
I also have Fire and Blood here for reference.
Awesome.
Ah. Yes, because you're the one reader.
Well,
I'm trying not to spoil myself too much.
Yeah,
I
did put the book in for order. I'm quite familiar with the History and Lore of the Seven Kingdoms, I think it's called, that series.
Mm-hmm.
So should we kick off with like the big discussion topic of blood and cheese? Because that's kind of what this episode really sort of like builds up to.
Yeah.
I have a spicy hotter take on this one.
Okay.
I actually think they did a solid job. I think it...
Oh, super spicy. Would never agree with that 100%. Terrible opinion.
So there's a lot of people obviously going, actually...
You'd be surprised. There's a lot of people who hated it.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of people
hated it. And it's people who want...
I liked it too.
I think a lot of it is people who want it lifted from the book. But there's a few things about that I don't think would work, right? That don't get lost in the translation of the media. The first is like it would just kind of be too traumatic for too many people. Like with a book you can sort of disengage, you've got a bit more control over it, but I think it's clearly one of those moments where it's designed to just be like, it's like the second Human Centipede movie. It's just designed to be like super shocking and nothing else. Mm-hmm. And I think that when they add the flesh on the bones of the story for House of the Dragon, it sort of makes less sense because it doesn't flow. Yes, Daemon is like a bit of a nutter. Yes, he's going to do drastic actions, but this is more of a fumbling. This is more of a mistake. And it's also kind of like, it would seem a little bit counterintuitive to me to conjure that kind of maliciousness up out of nowhere. It's also kind of the case where do any of you guys want to carry on, because I'm kind of sort of like still processing, but my general vibe is that like I kind of think that it was like shocking enough.
My question, though, I have been trying to avoid spoilers as much as I possibly can, and I've glanced at the wiki mm-hmm. once or twice way back when season one was coming out, but I've specifically not read the book, so I knew that the death of the child was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that it was a Sophie's choice and that one of them dies and one of them doesn't. I can't remember the specifics because I was specifically trying to forget the specifics. So in the books, can you tell me what the tangible difference is between what was presented in the show and what was in the books? Just for my own point of reference, because again, eventually I do want to read the books, but I kind of want to enjoy the series for what it is.
Mm. Right.
So what's the difference?
So there's a lot of differences. I have it right in front of me, but just from memory, so Allison is there like tied up watching this all, everything happen, and there's also a third child involved, a younger son to the twins, and the choice that they make, the queen make, is between her older son and your younger son.
Yeah,
who to kill. And so she tells them to kill the younger child, and they end up killing the older son instead, Jaehaerys. And then they sort of mock to the younger son. They like prod him and say, "Your mom wanted you dead," and all this stuff to try to fuck with him.
Okay, yeah, because I remember it being a Sophie's choice, and then it's a choice between siblings and however you're going to survive the trauma of having to choose between your children. So I kind of remembered that. I forgot that there was a third child. So
Well, the,
that's where the gap is.
yeah, the it, judging from, so I've got the family tree up here, and it does look like they've taken the
They've
child
got
out
the
of the.
third one.
That's if we are to believe what's currently on the screen there. Like, it might be the case that they've decided to
I don't expect them to be adding
extra Targaryens. Yeah.
extra Targaryen.
So it's it.
There is apparently there is a fourth child of Alicent that is coming
Aeron,
this season
yeah.
that hasn't been seen yet.
No, but he is
But other
close
than
to
that, I
it.
don't think there are going to be surprises.
However, in terms of thematics, having two children who look the same but have different genders is so much more thematically resonant than three children. In terms of you've got the twin drama that's happening between the two Kingsguard. You have Jaime and Cersei, who said that they were basically the same. Everyone confused them until they were a certain age. You had Aegon confusing Jaehaerys for Jaehaera in his intro scene during this. And the tangible difference, the only tangible difference, is their gender, is much more thematically resonant in how the series has been presented thus far than if it was a choice between two sons. A choice between, you search for a cock and that's what makes a child's life worth living, is 100% more thematically resonant with what the show has thus far presented us than it would if it was the choice between two sons.
Like it's it definitely like it folds into the plot a lot more. And also, one of the things I do notice, right? So one of the also key differences is that when Daemon went to get blood and to recruit blood and cheese, he was explicitly trying to get Aemond Targaryen, One Eye, killed. And it just seems, which doesn't happen in the books, as I understand it. So this is an.
It didn't get that specific
Yeah,
in the
it's
books.
son for a son kind of thing, right? But of course, the books are written with secondhand knowledge, and we don't really know whether or not the show has an unreliable narrator, because it definitely looks like the perspective of the show is trying to get us to side with Team Black. But also, I've noticed that in this, just in this very first episode, that they're certainly trying to humanize Team Green a little bit too. But I think that the idea of softening it down a little bit and softening it down a little bit and to also try and make it so that it wasn't like they were after the young kids, they were actually really after Aemond, and it was just grief and anger that fucked up the plan. So I think it makes Rhaenyra, the changes make Rhaenyra look a bit more like sympathetic, or we're more sympathetic to Rhaenyra. And at the same time, though, of course, have you noticed how like Aegon.
Aegon too. You feel sympathetic for Aegon. Like in this episode, he's like, oh, he's kind of like the bro. Like he's like not like he's like done fucked up stuff, but he's not a psycho like Joffrey or anything. He wants to do. He wants to be a good king.
I enjoyed the fact that he's literally got the shadow of his father hanging over him. So in the King's like the King's Court scene where I had the small folk coming up and for petitioning the king, it literally had the statue of Viserys looking over him, and he was clearly trying to emulate his father, who was renowned for being soft-hearted and doting, and then like he wants he he's Like, the interesting thing with him is obviously until his coronation, he was basically unloved, as far as we can tell, or at least is how it's presented. And then he got the love of the small folk. And I think he's a bit hooked on that love of the small folk. He doesn't like saying no to the small folk. He doesn't like, he wants to be seen as benevolent and kind and be get that admiration and adoration. And I'll be interested to see what happens if the small folk were to turn on him, which they may well do, or whether or not he will start doing things for the small folk. But he clearly has no long-term comprehension of consequences for his politicking, in the same
Possibly,
way his father
yeah.
had. Yeah, like he's like, yeah, sure, I'll give you a sheep back, and he's got the heavy thing of being like, not a good idea, because the rest are going to ask, and you need to fight a war. Like, that's not
I'm a
rocket science. It's not genius.
possibly
It's
I'm
just he's.
yeah I'm I mean I'm a little torn on some of them because it's like I think the idea is that like Otto Hightower, they mention it in the show, he's Hand of Three Kings, he's should we say a safe pair of hands for the realm, right? But like what is interesting is that like I like the dabbling with generosity and the magnanimousness, but have you noticed how, and I think this is on purpose because it seems like an acting thing, that Aegon is sort of channeling a little bit of Viserys from Game of Thrones. Do you see the inclinations in his voice, the accent, like he's kind of chat, like the voices are like are very similar in a very like deliberate way, it seems.
I hadn't noticed that, but I'll pay more attention next
Yeah,
time.
there's something like there's a forced sincerity which is similar to Viserys.
A pointedness, I think, like
Like, yeah, it's hard to kind of describe it, but it's like he's putting on a show, but he's also not very good at putting on a show. Does that make any sense? I
I mean,
don't know. It's an
I think
actor choice, and
the
it's a really good actor
yeah,
choice,
yeah,
but
I
it's one
think
of those, like, you don't know where you stand.
honestly, I think all the acting in this is top tier. And
Oh, always. 100%.
that goes particularly actually, I mean, Helena, I thought was, there's been a lot of discussion about her sort of reaction to Blood and Cheese. I think the shock was a real was the call. Like it felt
Oh.
very real to me because it also felt like it she had this like glaze in her eyes that it was like a vision was coming true. And it also but also she had the shock and the delayed response and it all I think like in terms of like how they measured the gravitas of that moment, I think they did really well. But I think the real talent
Oh.
is actually Aemond Targaryen. Because la at the end of the last season, right, I thought the jewel in the eye thing was so cheesy, right, so silly, and I'm kind of was really expecting them to build him up into a really like dorky character, who takes maybe themselves a little bit too seriously, fancies themselves as a little bit of an anime type character, but actually Aemond ended up being relatively like again likable, and.
So far.
So far, and I mean, like amicable and sort of like easy to watch on the screen, rather than being some kind of try hard guy. I mean, when he walked into the small council with a little bit of a stick up his ass, that was kind of like interest. Like I thought that made a point, but
Well, what I enjoyed about that specifically is, again, I need to kind of rewatch season one, but when Aegon came in, he said something like, what news or something, which I'm pretty sure is the line that Viserys used when he entered the small council for the first small council scene in season one. And then later on, Daemon joined the party being a bit of a snarky so and so, and being like, the master swordsman brother. And I like that they're obviously the comparison between Aemond and Daemon are tangible and consistent and almost persistently annoying. There is, the uncle to the nephew comparison is a obvious one. But I am enjoying that they are getting some more Aegon Viserys comparisons as the season go, and the fact that you've got these two siblings, one who's the king and one who's the kind of rogue fightery one, with the cool dragon. I like that they're pulling those strings because it's quite an easy string to pull, but it's a satisfying one to see as it unravels.
Definitely. Yeah. What else did we have this episode? Oh, I got a great one. The music. The music.
Oh yeah.
So
Always great. Always great.
always great. Is it still Romain Djawadi?
Yeah. I
assume so.
It's got its kind of vibe to it. And it's the one that really kind of hit me. I know a lot of people think the North when they saw the North stuff, and that was kind of cool. But to me, it was the first. It being in the council meeting when the music led into the thing. It felt very like, I don't know, seasons sort of 6 and 7 of Game of Thrones, where I thought the music on that era of Game of Thrones was really good too. And that one just hit. But also they folded in the northern theme into this show, and there are some book inconsistencies, of course, when it came because they met at the wall. But obviously, it looks like the showrunners wanted to just show the wall and to sort of demonstrate maybe the slight changes in superstition that the Northerners had, because of course Ned Stark famously didn't believe in the White Walkers or any of that superstitious stuff. But obviously, Craigan Stark, or
Cregan.
yeah,
Yeah,
he he,
Cregan.
Cregan, Mr. Stark, Lord Stark. He, yeah, like I,
Mr. Doctor.
yeah, he, yeah. So, because he talked about, in this very, in this very place, my ancestors bent the knee under the threat of dragons for the sake of peace. And I would have really liked it if they sort of fleshed out that conversation, because that was a interesting bit of history. It shows that the Northerners consider, like as much as the Northerners harp on about duty, when the shit hits the fan, like
They're pragmatists.
they're pragmatic and they do want to save lives, or not, they don't want to just throw lives at a war. So like it's that was great. I know. And also as well with going over to so we've got Jacaris. He was the one that went north, I believe. Am I correct in that one? Jacaris.
Yeah,
yes.
Jace.
Sorry.
Caduceus Severus is dead.
They gave him a bit of a makeover, and that's good. He looks a little less, I don't know, dorky. He's kind of got he's
Well,
got
he looks a lot older.
yeah, he did.
He looks like he's aged 2 years in 2 weeks, a week, however long it's been, in terms of the internal timeline of the story.
I tried to work this out, and
I think it's been about a week
I think I read somewhere that it's 2 weeks.
Viserys' death.
And what's made difficult is that it's like, because he can fly on dragons, you can't measure time by distance really. So I think we're told that the we kick off 2 weeks after the last episode. However, I'm willing to give a lot of grace when something's happening far away from King's Landing, that it might just be in a slightly different time zone. It might just be slightly. But then
Right, we'll
again,
be watching in chronological.
then Jacaerys comes back and there's still mourning happening. So I don't think he could really have been gone up there for that long.
Well, I think there's a
He's got a
specific line
dragon.
about the Queen's been skirking her duty looking for the corpse of Lucerys for 2 days. So presuming it took her about a day or, half a day to go by dragon back to search for the body. Let's say she didn't find anything for 4 days and then she returned. We also have to take into account that the whole of the green side of Viserys' death happened a few of like a couple of days before the black side of things happened with that reveal. And then obviously the boys separated. So I think it's been roughly a week. So the fact that Jace has looked like he aged 2 years is a sign of either it's really cold in the north or the actor's aged 2 years. But he looks more, he's been to the north, he's had an experience. And I'm okay to concede aging actors. It's kind of the nature of the game.
Honestly, I think like as I get a bit, I don't care about slight inconsistencies. I'm
No,
always happy to
I'm
stick,
fine with it.
I'm always happy to like chalk it down to an unreliable narrator. Like it's the gist of it that's kind of important for me, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did enjoy a couple of like minor points of lore in the North. So the drawing stones to go to the Night's Watch is something that we haven't seen or heard of before. I quite like that as like a, you know, a randomized duty. I'm sure there's ways of it being rigged, but I trust the Starks to be relatively, you know, above board with who draws the black stone. And I also liked the idea that something that has definitely didn't happen in the time of Game of Thrones is there's enough men in the North that people who are considered too old to be good at the watch can be sent south. Because that's something that obviously the watch during the time of Game of Thrones never had enough manpower to even dream of sending anyone south. They never ever wanted to send anyone south to assist in the war. They had their duty, they had to stay at the wall, and also they didn't have enough men spare to send people down. So the fact that you can have, you know, the greybeards who've seen too many winters or whatever, able to be potentially sent to assist in a war, is
I
that's
don't.
new.
Are the gray, yeah, but are the Greybeards part of the Watch, or are they part of the Northern Forces?
I'm not sure because obviously it's on the watch where they're having the discussion, but I don't know whether or not that's, you know, Jacerys being taken up to the north to piss off the wall in a similar way to Target Tyrion, or whether or not that's, you know, House Stark saying it's men from the watch.
I think
Um,
yeah.
the
Go ahead, Max.
watch seems a lot more respected in this time period too, and it's really interesting to see the change that's taken place over the centuries, because by the time Game of
It's not
Thrones,
100%
it's kind of crap.
clear.
And like Jon Snow shows up expecting like honor and all this stuff,
Chivalry.
and it's just like, oh,
It's
these
fully
guys
manned as well.
suck.
Like, there is enough men to run the wall. It's not, you know, criminals sent up. It's, you know, every man from the north draws, 1 in 10 men from the north go to the wall. I might have to rewatch to see whether or not I get clarity on whether or not the greybeards, the older people, are
They have to be, right?
dark
Because
men or watchmen.
the Night's Watch vows that they're pretty much death to us part.
They're
Death,
everywhere.
yeah, like forever.
Yeah, but that's why I thought it would be really fascinating if that was there was enough people on the wall that watchmen could be sent south. But you're right, it's probably Stark men rather than watchmen. But yeah,
But yeah, it's
I need to rewatch it.
it is a bit of a disjunction then when when they're having that conversation on the wall. But
Yeah, I
they
need to
don't
rewatch the scene. You're probably right. I probably misread the scene.
have that conversation at the wall in the book. As I understand it, they basically kind of rage it up and become good friends, as it were. And I think that's one of the big criticisms I've heard from the book readers, is that it's like they've kind of glossed over some of these character bonding moments that they could have like really fleshed out. Do we want to talk about Laris?
Well, he only had a scene and a half of that.
Oh, it's a very interesting scene,
But I
isn't it?
think, I mean, he's jealous as fudge. And he's gonna be stirring shit now because he wants to stir shit.
Yeah.
Is he jealous? Is he
Like,
jealous? I was working this one out.
I'm trying to work out. So the thing that's interesting for me is Alicent has clearly had a full sexual awakening this episode. We haven't seen her have any interest whatsoever in anything to do with sexuality
I
when she was
think this
with
is because they just needed
Aerys.
something for her to do. I kind of feel like she was a little
I'm
bit, and it's like, oh,
well,
this is Game of Thrones. We probably put some sex in it somewhere, shouldn't we?
well, no, because I find it really, really interesting because I said when we watched season one that there's the conversation she has with what's she called? Cool Auntie. Rhaenys.
Rhaenys.
So she has a conversation with Rhaenys, and I translated that sequence as being
Rhaenyra. No, Rhaenys, yeah.
Rhaenys pitying Alicent for never having had an orgasm. Like the concept that she's never ever the imagination to see herself being on top and actually being able to have any form of sexual liberation at all. And that being like just a pitying Aunt Lee, like w you poor, poor woman who has like not even considered sexual liberation or emotional liberation or anything like that. And that's how I read that scene where she said, "Have you never seen yourself on the Iron Throne?" Now I had two theories in season one regarding either Alicent was completely sexually stunted, and then this has just been the moment Viserys has gone. She has decided to just go full awakening, and that's when she and Kristen decided to jump into bed together. Or the other question I had from season one was at the point where Vhagar was claimed, no one could track down what Kristen was doing. No one knows where the head of the Kingsguard was or the Kingsguard was at the point where the princes were off claiming dragons and losing eyes. And I had a theory at that point that maybe Alicent and Kristen were doing something on the side. So I don't know whether or not they're ever going to clarify whether or not this relationship has been going on for a decade, or whether or not this is the emotional relationship has been going on for a decade, but Alicent waited until Viserys was dead, and then it straight to Horn Town. I'm proud of Alicent. I know she's like being presented as the villain, but as a woman, I'm like, yeah, girl, get on top.
This is interesting. Yeah, she. I mean, she's.
I'm proud of her.
It's you know, we you don't see Cunnilingus on t on screen very much, do you? It's
Yeah, in the
interesting.
last scene, she's like actually going for it. Like, I hope the one thing I'm kind of it would be tragic and maybe a poignant plot point is if it is that it's only since Viserys's death that she and Kristen have finally given in to the physical side of this emotional connection. And if up until this point they've been justifying any physical intimacy they've had as it's not sex, it's just like it's just cunnilingus. It's not sex, it's not physical penetration. Therefore, in my very minimal like sexual liberation and my concept of chastity from a medieval standpoint, it doesn't count as sex. It's not physical penetration. If at the point where she and he finally decided to go all the way, and that's the point where she, like the same night that she lost her grandchild, like that's some juicy irony, some painful, like
That's
she finally decided that now
that
was
would
the
be
time to go all
interesting.
out.
So,
And then
yeah.
her daughter interrupts her before she can finish, and she's lost her grandchild has been horribly decapitated. If that's the point where she finally decided to go all the way to sexual liberation and then is like stunted way back by personal tragedy, it would be juicy. If it's not that, that's still, you know, it's still really entertaining that obviously her daughter ran in traumatized and grieving to see her mum getting on. But
It's
yeah,
yeah, I mean
I want it. There's a couple of points that I want clarity on, but either way, it's juicy, juicy
it,
storytelling.
if I mean I think this is interesting from a I mean from a Kristen Cole kind of point of view, because I don't know how much Kristen Cole's into it. I think that he's
I think he's
kind.
into it.
I think he's into it. I think he's been into it for a while. At least
Like, why
emotionally,
he's
he's
been so
been.
loyal for so long. You
I
know,
think the
I mean, I guess
loyalty
he doesn't
is.
really have.
I think the loyalty
He
is the
doesn't really
reason why
have
he's doing it,
much of
though.
another choice.
Yeah, he doesn't have a choice.
Yeah.
Well, I think the other thing with him is I think both he and Alison, their kinks are the oh no, we're too pure for this, but we're gonna do it anyway. Like I think they both think themselves above it, and it's a little bit of a kink for both of them because he's still taking it. He's taking off his cloak. He puts his cloak back on. He takes off his cloak. He puts his cloak back on.
If it's a kink for Kristen Cole, it's a humiliation kink, because like
Yeah.
he looks so ashamed of himself and so kind of sad. I kind of yeah, like and also like, you know, obviously problematic behavior, but also like in it's I think it's like an interesting like reversal of power in Game of Thrones, right? Because you've got, what's that, King's Right or whatever it is, where he can just basically bed anyone that he wants to. But
Right of the first night.
it's,
Eau de Seigneur.
First night.
yeah, something like that. But so it's a bit like, but anyway, it's very patriarchal, and this is a little bit of a reversal of that patriarchy, which I don't know, it's symbolic, I suppose, right?
Yeah, well, again, like I talked about it in season one as well. I do love the fact that in this one they show female instigation and female pleasure in sex, and also sometimes male impotency and male dissatisfaction in intimacy, which is something that in the original Game of Thrones never happened. Not once. Maybe once or twice they showed some level of female enjoyment, but they wouldn't have dreamed of any level of male impotency because it wasn't a. I feel like this has got a really interesting balance between actually showing some like more gender dynamics when it comes to sex, and I find it fascinating. I think it's just every time they, instead of it being a gratuitous sex scene, even though some of them are, it's a lot more female perspective. And it's also, it's a lot less, like it is gratuitous, but like you're not seeing
I don't think
anything.
it's I don't think it's gratuitous at all. I
I
think
think it,
it's
I
tastefully
think
done.
it's got, well, it's as tasteful as it can be, but like it has character meaning. It's not just, oh, look, tits. Like, I
Because
don't think we've seen, like, we've had two quite intimate sex scenes or intimate scenes in this episode, and not a single one featured nipple. As far as I could see,
It's
I mean, I could probably hunt the frame, but
so, no, all right, should we go hunt the nipple? No, so I yeah, totally.
like
And
in
also,
comparison to Game of Thrones, it's miles apart, absolute miles.
So what is interesting about Criston Cole, I'll try and find him on the character thing, is actually the two times that we've seen him have sex, he is he's gonna be in the small council, isn't he? No, he's gonna be in the King's Guard. I can't see him. Is he? Oh, that's him in the dark. So yeah, so basically the two times that we've seen him have sex in this episode, right? He was going down on Alicent, and then he was and then Alicent was on top on the second scene. So Alicent clearly being the dominant party in this, the being the top, as it were. And again, I think that's kind of like a little bit symbolic as well. But then, Queen, Kingsguard, I don't know. It kind of
But
writes itself, doesn't
I
it?
do find it slightly interesting as well that Kristen absolutely shames Rhaenyra all the time. Like he's constantly like that, her, that slut, she's a snake, all that jazz. But at the point where she was instigating stuff, he was the one in top. He was the one, like she obviously brought the power, but then like Alicent really is complete authority at this point. Obviously, they've got much more of a relationship. They've had, over a decade of ridiculous loyalty, like proper, like guard dog loyalty. But again, I don't know how it'd be interesting to see whether or not the show ever actually exposits at what point this relationship went from a deeply emotional relationship, like to a physical one. Because that to me would be really good to know whether or not it has been going on for in secret for a decade, or whether or not it has only been in the last couple of weeks that they've decided that it's time to cross that line. Because it kind of makes more sense for Varys to be jealous if it's a recent thing.
Laris.
Varys, it makes more sense if he's like deciding to like stir the pot and get Aemond all worked up and stepping across his grandfather and his mother to avenge himself on Alicent, only if Laris is jealous because it's a recent thing. Because he obviously he was trying to, knock on Alicent's door and she was busy with Kristen. It makes sense if he's jealous if it's a recent thing. I also found it interesting that he said he'd replaced all of Alicent's maids. And then the next sequence, she sent all the maids away from her bath.
Because there was that one maid that crumbled the
Because.
thing into the pestle, and it was like, hang on a minute, hang on a minute, get the fuck out of here. Also, just as a side note
But.
on the stream, The fucking Kingsguard armor in House of Dragon is just so amazing. Like, it's so intricate with the patterns on it.
It's
10 out of 10. Like, I joined the Kingsguard just for
good.
the armor. Like, it's just.
I also like that in season one, I believe Alicent wears dresses of a similar pattern. She has the cross guard kind of shaping to the front of her gowns, which makes it look from the get-go that, you know, she's kind of a she's a royal retainer as much as she is a member of the household. She's not just Annie's friend. I think I can't remember which of the gowns. I think it might even be her light the torches green gown from the first banquet scene, has got that similar cross patterning. I don't know whether or not it'll be on the pictures that no, it's not that one, it's another
It's not.
one. Definitely she has at least one dress that has that sort of cross guard
Oh,
that
okay.
matches with the I'll have to look it up. I promise it exists. I have it in my memory banks. But yeah.
That's a cool dress, as I mean, that's
I mean it's what I'd call a power suit gown. Again, with a lot of late season Cersei gowns are power suit gowns, and this has kind of got a similar vibe, particularly heavy jewellery and the wide set shoulders.
There's a YouTube video from a woman who I think does a history channel predominantly, but she did a breakdown of all of the outfits in Game of Thrones and how much sense they made. So, like, you know, why the Northerners had this kind of outfit, why the Southerners had
I
this
think
kind
I
of.
sent you that
It was the one
episode
you said,
about.
and then the King's
Yeah.
Landing, and you had the mix of them. Also, speaking of drip, have I found that scene with Corlys Velaryon very interesting, and I absolutely love the blue tunics of all the Velaryon people, but also
Oh yeah.
Varys, Corlys Velaryon. He was just, I don't know, he had a killer outfit on. I don't know why I'm just like, why the I don't think it, no, I
I
don't.
mean, the outfits are great. I mean, I'll be I that see that scene was interesting because it was a one scene between a character who didn't interact with any other characters throughout the whole of the episode. He didn't interact with his wife, he didn't interact with any of the other Team Black. He just interacted with his ship and that ship commander,
Who,
captain, second in
yeah,
command,
bastard son,
right person?
maybe.
Maybe,
Accepts his mail, picks up
pretty
his Amazon
sure.
packages. Yeah.
I like it was such a kind of it was a non sequitur of a scene in terms of that character. It was someone like a guy who rescued him from being drowned. That's interesting to know, and who is working on
He's
the ship, and also, you know, who said like I enjoyed the fact that he was like, I'm sorry for the loss of your heir, acknowledging that probably Lucerys was a bastard, it's well known. But like otherwise it was like it felt very disconnected, and so I'm hoping it's set up for something
Totally,
later. I'm
totally,
hoping this
totally,
character
totally.
will
It
become
is.
more
I
important.
know,
I'm
like, I.
assuming.
So I don't know if Max wants to verify or just not ver or just like not on
I'm
what I think is going to happen,
naive.
right? So this is my guess, right? I don't have any insider knowledge on this one, but I think it's set up that he's the bastard son, right? Like that to me seems kind of a very well signaled.
So I'll say it doesn't get that specific in the book, but you're on the right track.
We may, yeah,
Like,
like.
so I think what it's setting up is this isn't really a spoiler. So there's all these dragons, right, on Dragonstone. They
Oh,
don't
is
have
it?
enough dragon
Do we
riders for all
think this
these
is the dragon
dragons.
seed?
So there's been. The Valyrian and Targaryen bastards exist throughout the world. We know this.
Thinking this guy's a
So
dragon seed.
I'm thinking he could be.
Has to be.
That would be
I'm
interesting.
putting money down on it, right? Because here's the thing, right? So there's this. I think that there's this rumor or there's this like thing that's said, and I think it's deliberately not proven or disproven, right? Which is. That Targaryens are like magically linked to dragons. No, oh, old Valeria. So that means like Valerians and Targaryens. They're like the two houses that can ride dragons. Now, my.
I think the Valyrians strictly don't ride dragons, but if but they have because they've interbreed with them for so long for the last 100 years, they a lot of them can now.
Yeah.
But historically before they couldn't
So.
because they were because the Targaryens were like in the upper tier of Valyrian society, dragon lords, and I think the Valyrians were well respected, but they were like they were strictly ship people.
Okay. So,
Yeah.
so,
There,
so.
there's nothing to breeding that there could be dragon blood in the system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the suspicion is that, you need a special kind of lineage to be able to ride dragons. However, I suspect this is a little bit of an analog for the medieval church in UK or England rather, where the only people that could read the Bible were reading it in Latin. So I think Latin is kind of a Latin and High Valyrian are kind of like, parallels or metaphors in this
Yeah.
world. And I think that they raise the dragons specifically to respond, like the dragon people. So, the dragon raisers, the people that there's a special name for them, isn't there? The people that keep the dragons. They also speak High Valyrian. You see them in the first episode. And I think the idea is that the dragons are raised to understand the language of High Valyrian to the exclusion of all other languages, so that only people that know High Valyrian can ride them. And I think that the idea is that it's made out to be magic, or made out to be something more mysterious, or made out to be a little bit like the Divine Right of Kings, but for dragons. And I think that it's actually like it's all smoke and mirrors. They're just using High Valyrian as a gatekeeping language to stop commoners from riding dragons.
I think that High Valyrian is a part of it, but I think there is an actual genetic, maybe magic link with the Targaryens and dragons because just the stillborn children that we've seen from Daenerys and Rhaenyra that have had dragon-like features in them. So, and they talk about play how the Targaryens experimented with evil like blood magic and stuff
I think this
to
is a theory that we've
create the
definitely discussed
dragons.
before.
And I'm more on Max's side than Chris's side,
Totally, I
in
get
terms
I
of agreement. Like, yeah, but I mostly also because you have moments with like Rhaenyra during her childbirth, like having flashes of Syrax. And you have things like, Dany does speak in Valyrian, but sometimes her dragons just kind of react to her. And we also had the discussion during the final battle between Aemond and Lucerys at the end of season one. Like, even if they're able to shout the commands, how, sometimes with like the wind and the rain, how are the dragons going to hear the language? There has to be a level of either beastly intuition or just animal handling, which might not necessarily be based entirely on language. But I do love where you're coming from on the
I
theory that it is language based because that's such a cool concept, but I don't think it quite matches with the world as it's presented.
well, I th I
Because yeah, it's, a
it
lot of people can speak High Valyrian. It's
not that
not
many,
just
right?
the
Like
Targaryen. Well, we
everyone in
see in
Essos.
yeah, Essos. I mean, it's like the lingua franca of Essos. Like the different cities
Oh,
have
they
their
do.
dialects, like sort of like Spanish, Portuguese, Italian, and it's like Missandei spoke High Valyrian.
Red priestesses. Although, are there red priestesses in this? We haven't seen any yet. They're kind of new, aren't
We
they?
haven't seen it yet, but we haven't really been to Essos yet.
Or.
Yeah, I don't know when I don't know when the founding of Azor Ahai really comes into in the pantheon of because obviously the seven-sided star is well in play, but this is also a time when the old gods are still pretty in practice.
I'm just
I
thinking,
don't know where the Lord of the Light stands within that.
I'm kind of thinking
Definitely
I
new to.
Westeros
Yeah.
in the Game of Thrones. So if there, if it is in practice, it's Essos and maybe even as far as a Shai only.
I think the fact that actually, if basically everyone in Essos speaks High Valyrian, then I think that kind of knocks my theory into touch, really, doesn't it?
I
It
mean, it's a really cool theory, but I just don't think it works necessarily with this world as it's presented. I mean, potentially by the time we get to Dany's era,
Yeah.
then that might have changed slightly. But again,
I
it's like I love the theory; it makes my brain tingle. But I just don't know whether or not it works actually is what we've been presented
Yeah,
to with the
I
lore.
don't know. I feel like I could put together quite a labored defense of it, but I think a lot of it is vibes. And then like it's like I think if my theory has any weight to it, it's not necessarily strictly about language, but I would say it's more like deliberately ambiguous or
Oh,
mythical or
yeah.
legendary rather than just an outright, and it could be that how in Fallout radiation works slightly differently to the real world. Well, I say slightly differently, an entirely different sort of set of biology and physics. And I think maybe inbreeding might be similar in Game of Thrones, where it's like, because like you know I mean I don't know much about inbreeding, but like I you know like in the world like I don't know, could it in the world of Game of Thrones, could it cause the inbreeding of the Targaryens? Could that cause the dragony features to come through?
Well, I'd be interested because I think I talked about this again with season one is in the books there's a lot about the problems with childbirth in the Targaryen bloodline, including like lizard babies being born and miscarriages where they're born with leathery wings or claws or anything like that. And then I jokingly said, oh, well, they don't have normal birth defects that they like you toss a coin and one of them's crazy. But otherwise, like they either come out fine, crazy, or leather baby, like leathery winged baby lizard creatures. But then Jaehaerys and Jaehaera, their sigil in the old opening credits, and the reason for that is six fingers. They do actually have six fingers, six toes.
I forgot about
As
that.
in the books, which is it was actually part of the opening credits, their sigil for when they were born is six fingers, six toes, which was one of those things where I'm like, oh, they can actually have just normal incest birth defects. There's a lot. I wouldn't put it past it to be part of the issues, and I do enjoy the fact that that was a kind of an extra layer to the birthing problems and the finding heirs in the House of Dragons season one being potentially because of all of the incest causing additional risks during births, and the fact that in a way we had the three strong boys are born perfectly fine and those are easy births, and then we have the horrible miscarriage slash premature birth of the incest baby. Like maybe that is part of it, the fact that if they actually kind of sought further out the pool, maybe they'd more be more successful producing healthy heirs and having more successful births. Or it could just be medieval and also births wreck people. It
So
could it, like it's a layer if you want it. If you don't want the layer on the cake, you can just enjoy the cake as one tier.
if do you think that with dragons, right? Do you think that in episode two, and I haven't seen the trailer for episode two actually, so I might just pull it up
I've
now on the
not
side.
either.
Do you suspect, all right, going so completely ignorant of what could happen in episode two, do you suspect we will be seeing the Valyrian blockade in around King's Landing broken? Would that be will that because it was foreshadowed in
I don't think it's going to happen in episode two.
I definitely think there's going to be a battle involving ships and dragons at
I
some
think
point.
it could be because this season is only is it 8 episodes long?
Is it really?
I'm just going to do. I'll do a quick
Yeah,
check.
Probably.
I can see it happening. I don't think it's going to happen
Short.
next episode. I think next episode is going to have at least like a quarter of it is going to be like funeral, grief, mourning, Alicent getting like angry. Because at least in this episode, she was like sharing the grief. She was praying for Lucerys. She was still like, I think this is going to be the episode where like we've had and like we're going to have a lot of reactions. I think next episode, is going to be mostly like obviously the Greens are going to have a big old funeral. I'll be interested to see how, you know, the family kind of wrestles with that. I think Aemond is going to go completely batshit.
Yeah, where do
I
you for
think Alicent is going to be completely wrathful. I think poor old what's she called? Queen. Oh my gosh,
Helena.
blanking on her. Elena is going to be just broken, completely broken. And then obviously the Blacks are going to react to this. Like, I'm almost certain Daemon did not really intend for a 2-year-old, 3-year-old. Be
I
butchered.
think he didn't intend for
I
that to
don't think
happen,
he's
but
gonna mind.
he's gonna shrug it off. He's gonna be like,
Yeah,
it is what it is,
he'll
we'll move on. But
shrug
everyone
it
else,
off, but I don't think
Rhaenyra is not
Rhaenyra
gonna be
is going
happy.
to. Rhaenyra was very specific on wanting the specific person responsible for the death of Lucerys. I think she is going to be absolutely horrified when she sees the head of a 3-year-old, particularly as we haven't seen them this episode, just gone episode one. But obviously, she has 3 children or two children
Two
with
children
Daemon,
now,
and one of them is of an age with Jaehaerys. Like, she's probably going to literally look at a child who looks incredibly like her own, like youngest two. And that's not going to be healthy for their relationship. There is going to be like Daemon's love language, the way that he kind of is trying to assist his wife, is also, you know, he's selfish at a chaos storm and wants to he has no emotional maturity, so he wants to just burn the world down and smash things and put his dragon out. But he's trying to help her by seeking vengeance on her behalf. At least part of his motivation is that, and I think he is going to be really devastated when he doesn't get the reaction that he wants. He wants her to be like, "Thank you so much, a revenge, woo! We can begin this war proper." And that I don't think that's how she's going to react. She's going to be pissed.
This is, yeah,
And
this.
also, the other thing I worked out as well is officially, war has not yet been declared. Officially, like, there has been a dragon accident slash aggression, and there has been two, like, a king and a queen named king slash queen. But Rhaenyra hasn't officially declared war, and then this has been a fragrant assassination on a child, like a proper baby. Like, this is
Which
rough.
leads me to think that the end of episode two, blockade will just be destroyed. I think that'll yeah, I'm calling it. It's okay. You don't have to agree.
I will say for episode 3 or 4, that's my guess. 3 or 4
Maybe, but I think
when blockades are gonna go.
they've thrown a lot of
I'd
money
say two
on
or three.
the
I think you might be. I think you're right, Chris. I
because
won't
there's
hedge my bets, but say maybe three.
there's 8 episodes and they've spent a ton of money, which means I think we will probably, and also it's Dance of the Dragons. I think it's not impossible that we might see something akin to a small battle every other episode, to really give the
I
impression of
will be have
violence.
to be proven wrong. I think episode 3 or 4.
Yeah, I
I think
think
next episode is going to be like an aggression build.
could be, yeah. I didn't. I mean, we got. I
See,
was.
again, I have to be proved wrong.
I was surprised to see blood and cheese in episode one, but I'm glad it kind of got knocked out of the way because it was one of the things we were kind of all waiting for. And I kind of, I, I was expecting it to be as described in the books, in the spoken histories or whatever it's called. But I've never been happy for something to be like toned down like that, because it did totally.
I mean, it, I think it
Yeah,
was.
because it's really, really graphic in the book, like really bad. So it definitely needed to be toned down. They could not have put on screen what it's written in the book.
Yeah, and also the book is, it could be dramatized. It makes sense that the book is dramatized in a way that, the show wouldn't be. Yeah, because it's
I
telling.
again, as someone who's not read the book, I found the scene just like there's a helplessness and like a fear more than like a revulsion. There's the helplessness, the fear, which I think is that's sometimes a harder emotion to invoke, and like is one that kind of sticks with me. Like I find like revulsion is one of those things you can kind of throw away at the end of like watching it. You're like, oh, gross. But like a kind of a genuine like dread and horror is something that it, I think it's sticking with me. And like the fact that they made the castle so frightening when she's like running through the castle, like that castle feels like a horror show. Like it's so scary
And I love
until
it.
she gets into her mom's room.
Yeah, I love it when they're in the upstairs of the courtyard bit, and the rain is just coming down. It just looks, it sets the whole atmospheric tone of all of this episode was 10 out of 10. Everything
Oh, yes.
from the north to Laris's, shifty ways, to everything. Like they really nailed the tone with this.
I mean, I will say that, like, all the, from Game of Thrones never actually flumped in terms of production design, acting, music, costumes. Like, all of those have always been absolutely the peak of television. The only thing that let down Game of Thrones was the writing. Everything else was still pretty damn like the best you've ever seen. And I feel like Hot D every single episode knocks Game of Thrones out of the park. I don't know how they do it.
And also, I think one of the things I've noticed is that this didn't seem as sullen as season one.
I feel like there's more activity.
Okay, I considering there's a lot of death in this, I kind of like it had light and it had more light and dark, right? So obviously the sullen bits were really more sullen, but like you had uplifting bits like the north. You had and e even that scene even that scene between Corlys and was it, I think it's, I hear people calling him Adam or something, but or the twins, or even Masari, is it Masario, in the
Missara?
Masari in the hold, a lot of these like little conversations, they're just not as dour as they
Or
were.
Aegon making fun of Tywin Lannister
Oh
at
yeah.
the small council meeting.
Yeah, or the magnanimous bit where he's walking in and you go, it's Aegon the magnanimous. Magnanimous, what the fuck? Or the
There's
dragon cock
little points
stuff.
of humor and like, Alison getting some joy. Like Alison had no joy at all. The whole of season one, she didn't get a single moment of joy apart after like the first episode. After that, she's just miserable. And like, I also enjoyed the fact that the first thing you see of her is her hands, which has always been
That
like a
was re
visual theme for
yeah
Alison.
yeah
And I was
because
just like, I was like, it's a shot of her hands. Oh, that's Alison. Oh, that's Alison having an orgasm.
because
Okay.
at first you think, like, because when I saw that I thought someone's giving birth, that, do you know what I mean? Like, but and then
I thought that's hands. Is she giving birth? And I was like, oh no, that's not.
no, that's
Good job, her.
yeah. And also, I mean, even though it's not funny, even though she was banging Kristen Cole when Helena walked,
I mean,
was
there's
walked in,
irony to it.
it's like that morbidly dark Game of Thrones kind of like humor in the face of tragedy, like, so. And yeah,
Well,
the
it's walking in your mum, like it's having a nightmare and walking in your parents having sex. Like it's
it's
that
like.
kind of vibe. It's there's something just it's not humorous. Humorous is the wrong thing, but it's got there's something
It's
childlike about
like a
it
dark
at the
levity.
point. Yeah, and I think that's kind of what House of the Dragon needed, because the first season was so dour
That was,
that having like those little moments, even though I think the darkness is darker in season two, but the there's just that little sort, there's more of a ebb and flow, which I really appreciate, because I think that's one of the things, one of the things you said in season one that you found to be a disappointment, was the fact that there was no levity in comparison to like Game of Thrones season 6 through 8, where it was like, we're gonna have some humor. It's about a cock.
It doesn't have to be advanced humor. It just has to be light, you know?
Yeah.
Like I like that sort of that Monty Python one where the mountain just crushed that guy's head against the wall. Like that's all you need to like break it down a bit. And I think they
Break
did it
down your
in, yeah.
skull.
They so that, I think that's the bit I wanted to see righted, and I'm pretty sure, that's kind of the pacing, that's kind of the vibe that I'm looking for. It passes the vibe check as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I really enjoyed, like, again, it's sad how happy I am that Alicent has had an awakening, but like I would also be really equally as happy as if the point where she finally decides to be liberated and find some joy is also the point where she loses her grandchild, and that will immediately send her hurtling back into religious repression and guilt, like complete guilt.
I don't know,
Like if that's what happens, I will be perfectly happy with that equally. If like I don't mind either way, both ways it's just tasty, tasty
Okay,
karma.
here's a thought, right? It's not a complete thought, so like have how familiar I don't think Max might be, but Jenny, are you at all familiar with The Last of the Summer Wine? It used to be on Sunday evenings.
I am culturally aware, although I don't think I've ever watched an episode.
It's like the three old men going down a hill in a bathtub kind of
Yeah,
comedy,
yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
And you know
I
there's
don't know
that
what this show is, but I want to see it now after three old men
it's
have to
kind of
go down a hill.
it's
Very, very old school British kind of
comedy, yeah.
sitcom-y.
Carry on
Yeah.
kind of thing, yeah. And
Yeah.
there's
Yeah.
one there's like the one guy who's kind of short and meek, and he's having an affair with the younger the younger sort of bimbo lady, and it's that's the comedy, and they're always sneaking away to have a bit of fun, and then like the milk van drives away and they're revealed, or there's like they're exposed canoodling
I
behind
can
the
picture it.
yeah
Yeah.
and it's a bit like I if not like that, but like
I see where you're kind of going to with that.
If the sexual relationship between Alicent and Kristen was a little bit of the comic relief or something, then that would kind of work, right? Like I'm not opposed, I'm not opposed to using that as a levity device, you know?
Yeah, like I again, like it there's a sort of a surreal comedy to the blood and cheese sequence ending with her walking in on her mum getting it. And like obviously it's horrifying, but there is like it's just it's a I can't think of any other show that could carry that tone. And I'm really satisfied so far in how, like, season one, excellent. Season two, episode one, it's hitting the bar for me. It's great.
Honestly, I suspect, I mean, it's too much to pin onto just an opener, right? But we always got to bear in mind that the opener is usually one of the weaker episodes of the season. I think this one got 8.5 out of 10 on IMDb, which I think is a pretty solid
Only
score.
8.5? I'm disappointed
You
by that. I
disappointed with
think it's
8.5?
not.
Well, it's 8.7 is
Well, you know.
episode one. Is episode one, season one is 8.7. So
Okay.
8.5. So I'm thinking that's kind of par for the course for an
I'd
opener.
say then, yeah, I'd say that's pretty good.
I would say, I mean,
Yeah. Pretty accurate.
round that up to a 9, you know.
Yeah, I'd round it up to a 9.
I think an 8 point.
Yeah.
I would say an 8.5 is fair. I don't
Well,
know.
to be honest, I won't want to score it too much higher, because then we don't know where we're going with later in the series. And I think it can improve. In the same way, like the Black Queen was just such a phenomenal episode to end the last season on, in terms of just acting and tone. So yeah, I'll be like I'm a happy duck. I'm enjoying season two so far, one episode in.
There was one thing, and I don't know if this was a joke or not, right? So going back to the scene where it's Corlys Velaryon and they're rebuilding his ship, which I think is like an allegory for like Corlys himself, right? They're rebuilding this crusty old ship so that it's going to have one last big hurrah, which and then it'll probably get burnt up by a dragon or something. And when I'm going to call him Adam, this bastard son guy, because I think I've
I
heard
think it's Alan.
Alan. All right, we'll call it
I think it's Alan.
Alan.
Sorry, me and
Maybe
my
I'm wrong.
sister
Maybe
watched
I'm wrong too,
Jurassic
but
Park
that's
over the
what I thought.
We'll call him
We watched
Alan.
Jurassic Park 3 over the
So,
weekend. Alan! Alan! Sorry.
obviously, like with Corliss's sons, they're white, and then his. And then it was Vaemond, his brother, that basically he was like the only one that called it out, right? It's like, look, they're white, obviously not his son, and it's like, yeah, but it's the history, it's the lineage, that the official, thing
This
that
is the
matters, right?
name.
And then so you got Alan, who is the bastard son, and it's like, so when Lucerys died, right? It's like he sort of becomes that one step closer to being. The heir, right? Because presumably, when you run out of all the official heirs, then you start tapping into the bastards, right? So, and I noticed he said something like, he was like, yeah, it was a very black day, and it's like, we're getting close, I'm getting closer. You're not, we're knocking off the bastard, we're knocking off the illegitimates. I'll get there. Yeah,
Yeah, I think it was like the blackest of
is the
crimes.
blackest of days, the blackest of crimes. I'm thinking, yeah,
Yeah,
well,
it was
it's like,
something like that.
I don't
Yeah,
know.
I also caught that, and I wasn't sure whether or
It's
not that
like,
was
is that a bit
deliberate
of
or
a
not.
bit of a dude?
I did definitely catch that he specifically said your heir, not your grandson. Which I found that to be, at the least a very specific,
That's a specific kind of,
that's in the same way that Ned Stark wrote that the heir to the throne, not my true heir until my true heir comes of age instead of being my son, Joffrey. I feel like your heir is a very careful bit of wording to get around the question of legitimacy, and it just being a known fact that Daenerys's children are not Valyrians, they're not true Valyrians, and it is known.
But then, if they were true Valyrians, wouldn't there be like some genetic concerns with Rhaenyra and Baelor?
I mean, if we're talking Targaryen genetic concerns, let's not even go past. Don't stop, pass, go. Like, you can see the family tree. How much is interconnected at this point?
Where they
they've color coded it quite
They're
nicely, I guess.
they're cousins.
They're first cousins. They're more than first cousins
They're more
genetically. They're
than
somewhere
first
between
cousins.
siblings and first cousins.
And obviously we've got siblings further up the chain and further down. Nah. Like,
It's
if we're talking genetic concerns, it's past the point of no return. In fact, to be honest, given that they're not true Valyrians, they actually probably have the best genetic matches of the as in the best genetic deviances of all the rest. So yeah, again, if they were Laenor's true children, Laenor's true children, then yes, that would be more of a concern than it is. But it wouldn't be as much of a family tree concern as the fact that, currently Rhaenyra's youngest two are uncle's children. We have uncles and sisters and brothers and cousins marrying each other. It's all a hot
Her
mess.
uncle's children and her grand, she only has two grandparents.
Who's the So right from the beginning of the very first episode, we've got Jaehaerys one, and it's like so much of that just comes down from one. It really just kind of
Jaehaerys and Alysanne, they were siblings, I think full siblings, and they had like eight children or something like that. And almost, I think all of his sons predeceased him and most of his daughters.
Yeah. And the daughters he did have left were like problematic kids. They were like, one of them was like a known like madam, and one of them was like a bard or something. Like he had some fun daughters, but not really the going to be queen types.
Okay.
I think one of them runs off to become a ship captain or something. Like just basically he had no good heirs, and of the heirs he had, that's the reason for the original large council, and thus the incest pool continues.
So one question I've been wondering about is, it seems to me like it's a foregone conclusion that Otto Hightower is out. And I've heard a few like Game of Thrones like knowledgeable people talk about they did a breakdown on the trailer, and I think they managed to assess that Otto Hightower would be kicked out early. But it seems like with Larys Strong making his moves, that Aegon, God, it's so hard to do the names. Aegon II is going to. Is going to choose someone else. Do you think he'll choose Larys, or do you think he'll choose one of his bros?
I wouldn't put it
I
past him
can't
not to
remember.
choose Aemond.
Yeah, yeah, he'll choose Aemond. Yeah.
Because that
That
would
makes
be a
most
nice
logical sense.
cycle back again to season one, where Daemond got all pissy because his brother never ar once asked him to be his hand.
And it's quite common
Because
for brothers to
Daemond,
meet, yeah.
yeah. So the whole thing with Daemond, if when you look at a character analysis of him from season one, is he never got mad about being on the throne. He kind of coveted the throne because it was fun and spicy. But what he really wanted was his brother's love, and what he really wanted was his brother to respect him enough to make him his hand. And if actually Aemond and oh my gosh, so many names. Aemond and
Aegon
Aegon and Aemond could
and name it.
Aegon and Aemond could do what Viserys and Daemon couldn't, and be a king and a hand. That would be pretty nifty in terms of the cycle.
Okay,
The
so
wheel it turns.
in the first council meeting of the season, Aemond, of course, came in, which could be considered a foreshadowing for his official entrance onto the Small Councillor's hand. However, now that you've said all of those things, you've kind of possibly inspired an idea. There might be a bait and switch at play here, right? So, and I think you might have just described the bait, but the switch is, could it be Daeron Targaryen? Could he be brought in?
Oh, that'd be
Yeah,
funny.
The secret
the
fourth
invisible
brother,
sibling.
and he just comes out of nowhere. Or maybe we've been introduced to him already as a background. We've seen him in the background or something.
We haven't ever seen him on screen. Another thing that a secret character that's potentially going to come to the forefront, and I only looked this up because, again, me and my sister over the weekend we watched King Arthur: Legend of the Sword, which is a fantastic, stupid movie, and I love it to bits. We were like, oh, I recognize that actor. Who is that actor? And we looked him up, and he's a fox, as in one of the famous fox acting families, siblings. He's been in, a couple of British
Was in
series,
like the
and
Michael
he
J.
has been
Fox foxes?
No, as in the Amelia family, like the one from Silent Witness. It's an acting family. You either know them or you don't. But he has been cast as is it Gawain Hightower? Alicent's brother, who we've only ever seen in his helmet, his very silly Hightower helmet. He got knocked off his horse by Daemon in season one, right at the beginning, first episode, and we've never actually seen his face. And he has been cast.
Forgot
So
about him.
I would be really interested to see when his character pops up and what he's going to do, because Alicent just lost her grandchild. Do you think she's going to call on her brother for help? And maybe if her father gets unseated as king, as as Hand of the King, maybe she'll try and bring in her brother to support her against her sons if her sons are going to be rebels.
Yeah.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I looked up the actor just because I was trying to work out where I knew him from, and according to whichever Wikipedia article I was looking at, he's been cast as Mr. Invisible Hightower.
Interesting. Well, he's here on the family tree.
He's here on the family.
And it does seem that they've obviously shrunk the family tree down from the books for obvious storytelling purposes. But it does seem that almost everyone listed here appears in the show, except for
Yeah.
Daeron Targaryen, Gawain Hightower. Yeah, everyone else here I
Yeah.
recognize, I see.
So, as I said, Gawain Hightower has appeared on screen, but we've never seen his face.
Yeah.
He got unseated by Daemon in season one, episode one, but we've never seen his face. So he's been off doing something, hopefully getting better at jousting and other such warly sports. But it'll be interesting to see him come back because obviously it's been 2 decades
Yep.
since then. So maybe he's grown up to be cool and interesting, or maybe he's grown up to be a big old weeb. I don't know, but I'd be interesting to know because he's quite an important character to have been introduced, not visually shown, and then
Yeah.
have disappeared for nearly, well, a full season if you count the fact that he wasn't featured in this episode. So I'll be interested to see. And they've obviously cast quite an interesting actor in that position who honestly looks very much like Alicent's uncle.
Okay, let's have a look at him. Right. Do we know what he's called?
Let me double check because I was drinking with my sister, so if I misread this whole thing, and I've been barking up the wrong
Okay,
tree
I'll
this whole
try
time.
and find
Let's see if I can find it quickly.
cast. Where's the cast? I hate navigating IMDb. Okay, we've got the cast. Oh my God, there's a cast of 99 plus.
Yeah, I'm going through other route. I'll see if I can beat you there.
Okay.
Freddie
So what's the
Fox.
name we're gonna call Fox? Oh, here we go. Freddy Fox.
Yeah, Freddie Fox. Yeah, and he has been cast. He's aged 35, and yeah, he does look quite like. He doesn't look anything like Otto, but he kind of does look like
I see
Otto's
some kind
brother.
of jawline. There's a jawline.
There's the jawline, he's blondish, he's got like freckles.
It's a scowl. He kind
The
of got
scowl.
that. Yeah, like he's kind of got. Yeah, no, it's a sort of a similar sort of smolder.
I don't think he looks much like Alicent, but I like the idea that they've kind of cast him to look like the uncle, particularly if they're going to have him come in and he's been at Old Tower this whole time. He might be brought in by the uncle. I don't know. It was just something that I happened to notice by pure chance because I was looking up the IMDb for Arthur Legend of the Sword, which is a very fun movie with some great music. FYI.
Nice.
But yeah, so that he's definitely a character who will come into play because you wouldn't cast an actor who has that much of a pedigree for a bit part, or you might do because it's Game of Thrones and all the cast is excellent.
Yeah, they did. Who was the priest, the priest guy that only was in for one episode?
Oh, I can't remember his name.
Yeah, a lot of people was kind of shocked at that.
Yeah. And but also, in the moment you see an actor get introduced who's not book canon, at that point in the series, you're like, this is gonna be a one episode bit part, isn't it? Like,
Yeah, of course, the famous actor Ed Sheeran. He didn't die, but he just came in for a bit, didn't he?
but
God, I
no, he
never
did
think his
die. He
face.
died off
Oh, he
screen.
did, didn't he? Yeah, he died off screen.
Yeah, they have a throwaway line about a sweet kid called Ed.
Yeah,
Yeah,
ginger
he was
guy, yeah.
in the Lannister army, ginger guy,
Burnt his
used to
face
sing
up.
beautifully, got horribly killed. Yeah.
I kind of appreciate that as a snapback, because honestly, that scene kind of, it was awful. Like,
but it was rough.
it was so rough. And the trouble is, the worst part of that scene is that it contains a bit of information that is kind of essential. Because if you cut that out, it's the bit where I think Arya's on her way to King's Landing to kill the Queen, or on the Yeah, and then she gets turned around and goes up to Winterfell, or some, or vice versa. So, like, it legitimately wouldn't make sense if they just cut the scene out, because she said she'd be going somewhere and then would end up somewhere else. So it's not
Yeah,
like they could do a sneaky
it's
director's cut.
rough.
And also this
Right.
shot as well, Ed Sheeran is in every shot, so you can't cut around it. Sorry. Okay.
No, I like it, but valid rant, valid rant.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Speaking of cameos, I think they should have had Charlie Day cameo as Cheese.
Who's Charlie Day?
Personally, Charlie from It's Always Sunny. It's Always
Oh
Sunny
yeah,
in
oh yeah, of
Philadelphia.
course. You put the little picture of him. That
With him with his rat basher,
yeah.
because in the show he's like known for bashing rats. So
Yeah, that
it
would
would
have been
just be
loud.
cool to have him in the background or something.
I mean, I wouldn't have understood that reference, and I feel like the people who would understand the reference might have taken them out of the moment a little bit.
I see that. I see
Well, they would have
that.
put a beard on him. I think
But
it would have worked. But I actually, interestingly enough, Cheese is spotted in earlier in the episode. I saw that on the second look through, so I thought that was kind of good. That was gonna this.
Yeah, it's pre-introduced, and obviously this is the final payoff for the beast beneath the boards, isn't it? It's she's been scared about the beast beneath the boards this whole time. She's scared about the rats, and lo and behold, it's cheese and blood that happens.
Yeah, and there's a lot of it's what's quite interesting is that throughout the show that all of the greens are looking up, and
Yeah,
that's
that's
the
one of the other things I
misdirection theme.
noticed.
Scorpions.
They're always looking up, and it's come from below.
Scared of the
That they're so
dragons.
worried about. I think also that could be potentially future foreshadowing, where they're so scared about their enemies in the sky and the enemies that are like lordly and above them, that they're going to miss out on what's happening with the small folk. I feel like there's a lot of like little things happening with the small folk this episode that was pretty blatant foreshadowing. So, you know, the having to take the sheep to feed the dragons, the money needed to like all of the stuff at that the King's Council, not King's Council, the King's Judication.
I like how he says
Like
small
all of the
folk. He goes, small folk.
small folk.
Small folk.
But like pretty much everything there was like, that's gonna be a problem. And like the
Yeah.
particularly the reaction when oh my gosh, brain. When Rhaenyra came across the remains of Lucerys and his dragon, and the fact that the small folk fled for their life when they saw a dragon. Like the small folk are terrified of dragon, the small folk are suffering and they're going to continue to suffer. And no matter how much lip service might be paid to them, if they're not actually paid or fed, gonna be a problem for later.
You've nailed this, I think, actually, because I think oh damn, it's you've just done one of those things I wish I thought about. What I thought, yeah, like you've got this, because it's such a foreshadowing, because like it's like Aegon is like he understands, like the he is he sees it. Otto Hightower doesn't, and it's going to be interesting with the Hand to see if a Hand, maybe Aemond, might st like. I don't. Aemond hasn't demonstrated any particular fondness for the small folk, so he, you know, it might be the case that Aemond actually ignores the small folk or treats the small folk with disdain, and that is when the problems start. You know, that's when the small folk start rising up, because, and maybe Max can verify. I don't know how spoilers come into this, but don't the small pit raid? Don't the small folk raid the dragon pit? Do not do they? So that's obviously an uprising of sorts. So maybe the small folk just get so sick of the dragons living under fear of them, and
I forget when exactly in the timeline that happens, though. It's been so long since I read it.
I feel like
I want
Storming
to
of
go
Dragon
back to
Pit's later.
read.
Yeah, I mean, of
But
course,
it's all build up. It happens before the end of the Dance of the Dragons, but I don't know when exactly.
But that might be the breaking. That might be the thing that Jenny sort of, you know, is sort of foreshadowing
I mean,
towards, right?
it's blatant foreshadowing. It's the same sort of foreshadowing that in Game of Thrones season one, the first time you're watching it, you don't get all the foreshadowing, which is basically, Ned, you're fucked. Ned, stop it. You are absolutely effed. Stop it. Go home. Stop talking to people. Stop trying to be a spy master. Stop trying to do the right thing. You're in a pit of snakes. Survive. And it feels like it's inevitable. It's a fall down a hill that it's so predictable once you see it. And this feels like that same sort of foreshadowing where you're like, you know exactly where you're going because you know to see it. Yeah. It's great. Love it.
Totally.
In terms of like other little like one little metaphor, there's a couple of like repeat lines of dialogue, and I really love this with House of the Dragon where they do like it's almost like poetry. It's like lines reversing each other, and they do a lot of in particularly in season one, they did a lot of like cuts to and from that linked up between scenes. And there was a couple of repeat lines in here which I really love. So there was the 1 in 10 men from the north draw the Blackstone and go to the north and become fodder for the Night's Watch, and one in a tenth of the flock are given to the dragons
Oh, so it's like
for
tithing. Yeah,
meat.
tithes. So, yeah. People, sheep.
There's also a
Oh,
paired line
small folk,
with
sheep, people. Oh,
small.
small
Ah,
folk,
oh,
yeah, their flocks, yeah.
good catch. Good catch, Jen. I've
There's
seen
also another
thematic.
paired line which is da, 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 both Alicent and Aemond say that the other one is angry because they haven't had a conversation. There's a really beautiful, obviously, there's a really beautiful sad scene between Rhaenyra and Jacaerys, like talking about their grief. And he comes in and he tries to be the big man and say how cool he's
Oh,
been and he's done good politicking and he's
so
got men
heartbreaking that
coming and he
scene.
can't hold it back. And then at the funeral, he's holding up his little brother and it's adorable. But they have that moment where the mother and the son are communicating post-trauma, while Alicent and Aemond have not communicated. They're both talking about each other in the third person. He's assuming that she's angry. And she's assuming he's angry, and they haven't actually communicated. I don't think he's confessed that it was an accident. Like this is one of the things
No.
I think I brought up in season one, which was what is Aemond going to be saying happened? Is he going to say, "Yeah, I was an angry badass. Me and Vega, we were like this together, and we decided to kill that boy because we're so cool." Or is he going to go to his mum and say, "Oh, mum, I've done fucked up. I done fucked up," and it looks like he's done the first. He's come in and he's like, "Well, I killed him, and I'm gonna be totally cool about it, and I'm not gonna show my insecurities." And at some point, I think he and her are gonna have a conversation, and he's gonna break, and she's gonna realize it was just a massive mistake. But at the moment, you've got that paired line where both of them are saying that the other one's just angry, and to me, that reads that they haven't had a conversation. They've not connected as a family at all.
From his point of view, there's no benefit to saying that it was an accident. That just makes him look bad, makes him look
Incompetent.
incompetent.
Incompetent, like he
I
can't
think he
control the
needs to
dragon.
talk to his mum about it.
Dangerous as
And
well.
there's a the other thing that's happening is almost everyone has been like, "Well, you know, Vega can sort it out. Vega can sort it out. Vega can sort it out." And he's kind of been with Kristen as well. He's like, "Well, me and Vega, we can like go kill loads of people. That'll be good. Woo, mission war." Given that he hasn't confessed that it was basically an accident, and given that he's basically fronting, I would be interested to see what he actually is able to do when he's in combat, when he's actually faced with killing people on Vega deliberately. I think Vega's gonna be like a full war mama. And he's going to be on the back of it just being a teenage boy, absolutely shitting himself. I don't know if he's actually got the gall for it
That's interesting,
or whether
yeah.
or not he's just fronting. Again, I don't mind either way. I don't mind if he becomes a callous, murdering butthole or if he is actually just a teenage boy who's completely out of his depth. Both of those concepts are really interesting when we're dealing with these high stakes. He is a child in charge of a nuke, and whether or not that power goes to his head and he becomes a cool badass, or not secretly, he's just a child with a nuke. I don't mind, those are both spicy.
I gotta be honest, I have this single episode has I'm surprised how much it's kind of warmed me up to the greens.
Yeah,
I
me
mean, they've
too. I
definitely
thought the
got
same
more
thing.
levity.
Going in, I to the season, I'm like, I'm 100% team black, but after this episode, I'm like, they're not like the greens aren't that bad,
It's
you
like,
know.
yeah, because I kind of like Team Black. I want to see more from Rhaelar and Rhaenyra, Targaryen. Like they always seem to be in the background, and they kind of seem interesting characters. And I'm like, and I think we might do, because don't they
Hopefully,
do dragon riding or something?
fingers crossed. Well, one of them does. One of them has yet to claim a dragon. That's a big
Yeah.
thing for her.
Cool. All right. I
Oh,
hope.
maybe she'll get one of the wild ones, because there was a question on who was going to get Sea Smoke. Because at the moment, Sea Smoke is still unclaimed, and we were going to say, like, we were talking about whether or not if there's a psychic connection between rider and dragon, and there's been no, so far, no record of any dragon being claimed without the owner being deceased. So the dragon, if the dragon lives on, the owner, like, if
Oh,
the
yeah.
rider dies, the dragon might claim another owner. While if the dragon dies, the owner will never reclaim another dragon. We were thinking that potentially if Sea Smoke claims a new rider, then Rhaenyra will Rhaenyra,
Rhaenyra.
mother
Rhaenyra?
fudging names, Rhaenyra will realize that Laenor has died despite her effort to sneak him away. Will also put a stig on her relationship with Rhaenys and potentially with Daemon.
I'm just
It
thinking.
also depends on who claims Sea Smoke. Maybe it will be Rhaeny. Rha Oh my god, one of the grandchildren of Rhaenyra, Rhaenys, or it might be another dragon siege. I don't know. Again, I've not read the books. I'm trying to not be too badly spoiled. I bet it's going to be a dragon siege, because that. I know dragon seeds come into play from my vague spoilering myself. But either way, that would be a really interesting part of developing the dragon lore and actually finally, like, putting a pin on whether or not it is magical or just training.
I'm just thinking, when Laenor faked his death, that would have been a great opportunity for a comedy moment in season one. I just.
My death comedy. I get what you mean, but that's a hilarious sentence.
Like, I'm just thinking of that episode of The Simpsons where Homer gets the dummy, and is like, Homer, I specifically asked, are you going to use that dummy to fake your death? And you said no.
I don't know
You
that
don't know
episode,
that
but
episode?
I will 100% take. I'm not good at cartoon references. It's not one of my it's cultural blind spot.
Judge. Have we? One thing I don't think we've covered was apparently the blacksmith in who was petitioning Aegon is going to be coming into play. Apparently, he's called something like Hugh the Hammer or something like that.
Okay, I did think he got like a his entrance was treated with a level of respect.
Yeah, and
And his
there's.
character was treated with a level of I don't know, subtle authority that I was like, is he gonna come back? I don't know if he's important, but
I believe he might be somewhat. He might end up going over to Team Black, I think. I don't know. Again, this is a little bit spoilery that I might be completely
I
wrong
mean,
on.
he's not being paid. Like, even if he without it being spoilery, that is, even if it's not. Even if it doesn't become a like a cause of illness, it's definitely a symptom of disease. There we go. Look at me dropping the metaphors.
Yeah, I he yeah, I think he might be like an analog for the small folk, or like an avatar for the small folk, if as it were.
Or an avatar for like the middle class, because he's a skilled laborer.
Or yeah, the tradesfolk, the yeah, I suppose the not yeah, because this is the class system in like medieval times. They were like they were a bit, it was like they're like clergy, tradesfolk, merchant folk.
That triangle thing, haven't you?
Yeah.
What is it
But
called?
so, cool. I think we've pretty much, in typical fashion, hit everything. Is there
Okay,
anything?
typical fashion, let me super quickly go through my list of things. I think there's going to be issues with identifying dragons from a distance. So there's that shot of being like dragon, and then obviously it's Vhagar. I think at some point a dragon is going to either be shot accidentally, so it's going to be in a home goal with a scorpion, or when dragons are in combat, it's going to be really hard to shoot the correct one. Or a dragon's going to approach, they're going to be like, oh, it's one of ours, and then it's not going to be one of theirs. I think there's going to be confusion with that. Small or far away. One of those things is going to happen. I've got the feeling that's going to happen. I think it's interesting that they put the blacks on a back foot in terms of combat prowess. So they don't have the money, they don't have the capital, and their dragons are already exhausted. Like Rhaenys was saying that she's been patrolling 100 miles of ocean on her own, and Daemon's off like, busy plotting revenge instead of actually helping with that. I think they've really put the blacks in a weakened position, and so I'll be interested to see whether or not they can come back from that. The fact that Aemond is not able to tell the difference between Jaehaera and Jaehaerys is foreshadowing for the guys not being able to tell the difference when he goes over and he like goes and just pat him on the head and realizes that it's the wrong child. I also like in terms of levity, we did talk about the fact that he kind of gently mocks his wife. And he's like, the queen is an endearing mystery, is she not? It's just was actually quite sweet for him.
In a little bit, yeah, like
Like
it was condescending, but it was
it's
also like not malicious.
yeah, it was yeah, it wasn't malicious, but it also showed his sort like he has no empathy for his sister wife too at the same time.
It wasn't like it was again, it wasn't cruel. It
No.
was just,
It was, yeah, it wasn't malicious.
yeah, and I enjoyed that. I did enjoy the fact that he brought the child to the council meeting. Was it just to sass Lord Lannister,
Yeah,
or was it
Tycho
just because he
Lannister?
likes
I don't know.
fueling
He's trying to be a better
chaos?
father to his son than
Yeah, is he trying
he
to be a better
got,
father than
maybe.
he was, or is he trying, or is it a
For
gender thing?
Tywin.
Like, obviously Rhaenyra wasn't able to be brought to councils as an equal to sit at the table until she'd been named like heir when she was 16. And so is it a sign of gender politics that a child is allowed in, but it really shouldn't be? And also like belittling the master of coin seems like a foolish thing to do. Where they're actively
I mean,
just
a
trying to make
Lannister
like a
master
joke
of coin
out of
at that.
him. Exactly. So I don't know. Is he just chaos loving? Is he trying to show fatherly affection? Is it trying to make us endear him us to their relationships?
I
Now that the
think,
child has been brutally murdered, next episode it's gonna be spicy.
honestly, just
All of the
Bants. It's just Bants. It's just Bants. Like,
above?
I mean, I think they understood. I think all the showrunners understood that they needed to bring in a little bit of, levity into the season. I think that was quite a well understood bit of criticism. And I think part of it was this was just a bit of a little bit of a distraction, a little bit almost to like settle you into the scene, sort of almost acclimatize you to the room, so that when they do drop the important information, you're already set up in the scene, perhaps.
I think it's also relevant that obviously the only introduction that we've really had to Aegon's children have been his bastards that he's put in fighting pits and filed their teeth. So actually then letting him have a moment where he's seemingly appreciating his son and acting in a somewhat fatherly manner, and like you can see that there's some level of endearment to his child, meaning that next episode we can have a reaction to it. I think if the showrunners hadn't shown any interaction between father and son, and then they'd had cheese and blood
That's a good point.
without having had that connection, next episode we'll be like, well, did he even care about his son? And now we have a tangible knowledge that he does care about his son. He did want to bring him in,
100%, yeah.
and will care about his loss.
But also, from the audience point of view, you might not even you might have lost track. You might not even have known his son. Like it's not at the forefront of my
I don't think
mind.
they appeared on screen up until, like, maybe they appeared on screen twice.
It's like it's not like the fact that he's even like married to Helene. Yeah, the fact that he's married to Helena,
Helena.
it doesn't. That's not like the th when I think about him, that's not the thing I think about first. It's yeah. So it could be the fake. So even his children, like if they didn't have that scene, it would not have immediately connected to me that even was his son, the king's son.
Yeah.
So yeah, obviously, but yeah. So
Right. I think it's just very clever writing. A couple more paired lines. So we had Aegon being introduced to the council with his full titles, and then they had mocking of the titles, and that kind of became a running joke. They also obviously had the Team Black being introduced in the same way. So it's also like when they come in constantly mocking the titles. It's kind of it's almost like a meta joke at this point because everyone has so many titles. But that was another kind of repeated line. There was also a repeated like, we should have killed them earlier, you should have killed them earlier. If we killed them earlier, we wouldn't have all of these issues. That was I think that was three or four times various people said it to other people.
Yeah, that
Who,
was
like, I
very
think
repeated,
Daemon
yeah.
said it to Rhaenys. Then Daemon said it to one of the Kingsguard twins, and then I think
Eric.
Aemon
Or is it
said
Eric?
it.
Yeah.
Eric, I can have a I've just
Yeah.
the Kingsguard
Sure.
twins. And then I think Aemon said it to or. Said it to it was at least three times that that line got bounced around, which again, murder is murder. It shouldn't happen. Da, 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 da. I've already mentioned that. I've already mentioned the statue of Viserys literally looking over Aegon's shoulder in the courtroom, which I found just nice visuals. I also the what news when he walks into the small council and goes, what news? It just I need to rewatch season one to see whether or not it's specifically something that Viserys says, but it feels like something Viserys would say, just wandering into the town council or into the king's house and being like, what's up, guys? Yeah, the war's on. Who gives a fluff? I would like to just double check on at some point Rhaenyra and Daemon's two children. Because where are they? What are they doing? They
Rhaenyra,
weren't at the funeral.
hang on a minute. Rhaenyra and Damon.
Have two children.
Yeah,
And then they lost the
Aegon,
tenure.
hang on a minute.
Aegon
Aegon and Viserys. And they're admittedly they're young. They're what, maybe 4 and 2? But where are they? They weren't at the funeral. They weren't like I just want to check in on them, check they're all right.
Yeah. At this point in the book, they're 8 and 10, but that they're aged down in the show, definitely.
In the show. We both know your brother can't keep a grip on his impulses. It's a lovely little reminder that Aegon is not quite right, and I think after this, after Blood and Cheese, oh boy. Shit's going down.
Yeah, see, this will be interesting to see how Aegon actually reacts to this because it's kind of tricky to get a handle on him, right? Because especially now with his new personality with a little bit of humor, it's like is he still a psychopath?
I mean,
But
very
then
likely.
does that even matter? Because it's like whether or not he actually cares or loves his son. But it might change his reaction, right? Like if he considers his son to be just a part of the royal process, and he's completely like sociopathic towards the whole thing, completely emotionless, then he might be more strategic. Whereas if he actually genuinely loves and cares for his son, he might go ballistic and just start burning stuff, you know?
I think he's like the vibe I'm getting from him is he'll be like, okay then. Everyone. And it won't be like, I don't think it'll be like wrath and ruin. I think he's gonna be like, there's gonna be a level of like just emotional imbalance to his revenge. I think he'll be like oddly chipper. And I think that that will be deeply unnerving. That's kind of the vibe I'm getting from him.
It could be that could be
I
like a
don't know.
really that could be a real like a cognitive dissonance moment where it's just like where he it's almost like he puts on a reaction.
The face is like what he presents to the council or to the public is so disconnected to actual emotion. I don't know. That could be. It's just because the way that the actor is really he's playing so many fields at once, and so it's so hard to pin down. That's kind of how I'm viewing it go down. I don't know. I don't know. We shall see. In terms of a couple of other ones, so what I found interesting is when Blood and Cheese were sneaking into the court, they walked past the lordly guys having their drinks, and they passed a bunch of royal guards, and no one reacted at all. And I think we already commented on the fact that all of the lords are too busy looking at the skies to look down. They're too busy looking at the lords, the higher powered people, to look down at the small folk. The fact that the rat catchers can just walk through the castle, no one reacted. No one cared, no one really even looked at them and thought at them, is both a symptom of the hierarchy of power, but also because this attack has happened, and because it's quite clear that the assassins were lowborn, I wouldn't put it past the blacks to suddenly turn on the lowborns and turn on the, to blame, are we going to have a Cersei Lannister murdering all of the bastards in the brothels? Are we going to have Alicent turning on all of the, all the rat catchers in the city get murdered, and so then the rats just go insane? I don't know whether or not they're going to go that point,
What
but
about?
I don't, it's going to, that sort of thing.
But also, Laris. What will Laris do?
Yeah.
But
Like the
that so the rat catchers, by the time of Game of Thrones, the Red Keep in is like infested with cats, not rats.
Oh
So
yeah.
they get rid of the rat catchers, replace them with a bunch of cats.
And then the cats go rabid.
Sir Pounce. Shout out to
Then
Sir Pounce.
maybe they'll kill off professional rat catchers and have cats instead, and like completely decimate an entire small folk industry.
Unemployed, all the unemployed rat catchers will have they have no vocation. They have no
I
other
mean, it
skill.
yeah, and it will upset again. It will upset the small folk, and it could
Small
lead
folk.
towards that. That is quite, yeah. It's,
So last couple of ones. I've only got like three little ones. So one, there is some sexual tension between White Worm and Damien still. There's still a little bit of banter, and I am slightly concerned that Damien's got a lot of pent-up frustration that he'll either take out with violence or I don't know when was the last time he got some, because I know that sometimes his way of releasing emotional stress, and I don't think Rhaenyra is able to help him in that aspect at the moment. So I'm slightly concerned he might look for assistance elsewhere, which could again cause more marital strife.
Well,
I don't know.
I here's the
But
thing,
there was
right?
definitely, I felt
Like,
like there was some sexual tension between him and the White Worm.
well, the thing is, I mean, there might be, he, I'm, how old is he? Because, like, it's Matt Smith.
He's only a couple years younger than Viserys.
He's a couple of years younger than Viserys, but Viserys did die very young. So Viserys, let's say he got married at like 17, Rhaenyra was 16 when she was heir, she's got a 16-year-old. So if we're saying Rhaenyra is like in her mid to late 30s, and then Daemon is maybe 16 years older than her, so maybe in his late 40s.
He's 16. In the books, he's 16 years older. Daemon was born in 81 AC, and Rhaenyra was born in 97
So
AC.
they've obviously aged up Rhaenyra, and they've aged up the gaps between her children. But if we're saying she's in her, mid to late 30s, and he's in his late 40s, early 50s, maybe,
then he might
he's
not
not a
be
death
as
door.
then he might not necessarily be as
Virile.
virile. He might not necessarily associate sex with coping in the same way that you might have done when he was younger. I don't
He's
know,
also
just
got
guessing.
very little emotional maturity. But I did find it interesting that he's seemingly wanting to burn bridges. Like he was snapping at the King's Guard, he was snapping at Rhaenys, he was dismissing the White Worm. Like I literally wrote down, burn ye bridges. And I would be interested to see whether or not they are actually, I wouldn't put it past this show to literally at some point have Daemon upon Dragontop burning some bridges.
Now we did.
Just because I think that would be a beautiful little metaphor.
Yeah, I think, as I understand it, we do see the twins this season, but obviously the twins aren't going to get blown down because we'd know about it from Game of Thrones. But there might be something, some sort
There
of
might be
metaphor folded into
something.
it.
So my last 3 points. So I did went through and listened to Alicent's prayer, and she prays to Allery Florent, who I'm assuming is a grandmother,
A flo
Ceres and Lucilla.
Florent.
A Florent is from Highgarden, isn't it?
I think so. I vaguely remember the name, but they're not on the tree.
Yeah, so I'm thinking it might be her like grandma or something, or
Yeah.
maybe her mum's maiden name.
I think so.
But I just it was cute. Goldcloak Commander loyalty. So we mentioned in when we reviewed season one how Daemon was like bribing his Goldcloaks with whores and drink and bribery and like giving them a really good old time. So maybe he could have like command of the Goldcloaks in the future, and then obviously took the Goldcloaks when he tootled off to have his rebellion and stole the egg. And it's still interesting that he still has loyal people within Goldcloaks. Just as a little thing, I don't know whether or not it'll come into play, but it'll be interesting if it does. Last but certainly not least, it was interesting that the small folk didn't even recognize Helena as queen. They had to say, who the fuck is she? Oh, she's the queen. So I don't know whether or not that's because she's a bit introverted and doesn't go out much, but she was there at the crowning of Aegon.
I think that makes I did like that little touch actually, because it does it
It
makes
shows how
sense.
separate.
I would actually be surprised if they did recognize her, because some queens, like, so who's the Highgarden in Game of Thrones?
Marjorie.
Marjorie Highgarden,
Tyrell.
Tyrell, that's it. She was very much a Princess Diana, right? She was out there in the
People's princess.
people's princess, out there with the orphans. But obviously, Helena is not that. She when she's introduced in her scene, she's sitting on the floor in a very private environment. And it just, even though it's not explicitly said, it's sort of like assumed that she's just her pr
Yeah,
she's just with her
interested.
kids all the time.
Yeah. And she was there for the crowning of Aegon, but I think other than that, she does mostly keep to herself. So I just liked it as like a little kind of like, a very clear, this is a separation of the people, like the fact that they can't even recognize, like, they probably recognize Alicent as Queen Mother, but they wouldn't recognize Helena, and it was just another little spoke on the wheel of this
Blood
segregation
might
between
have,
classes.
because he's a King's Guard. No, he's not. He's a gold cloak. Maybe a gold
Old
cloak.
cloak.
Oh, she's recognized her because he worked in the castle. But Blood didn't know who she was.
Despite being
But
that,
yeah,
well, a gold, yeah,
that's all my quick notes. Sorry, I always I'm like, we're done now. You're like, time to wrap up. I'm like, but I have like 20
hey,
minutes to
it's all right. We
say.
don't have a time limit, and you always bring the best notes, so it's all good. But that small folk, yeah, it's gonna there's gonna be
There's
class
going to be a
warfare.
reckoning.
Cool. All right. So How do we feel about the 8.5 IMDb? I think that's spot on.
I'd say it's fair because I think there's still room to improve, but it's a really strong start to this season. Really strong, very satisfied by this start to the season. Like they came out with a build-up episode, but with enough of a cathart at the end. And I am enjoying is not quite the right term. I am satisfied with the very slight change in tone to make it both tense but not hopeless.
Yeah, it's completely fixed it for me. I don't like I couldn't expect any better, really. Like, actually, yeah, saying that 8.5, no, I'm pulling it up to a 9. Like,
You know what? I'll drop it a 0.5 of a point because I did notice that Allison is wearing like medieval wedges, and screw that noise. Medieval wedges, nah, I'm not taking those shoes. Like, give her proper slippers. Don't give her wedges. Wedges is a stupid design for shoes that was never part of medieval history. Dropping half a point for that.
So you're dropping it
I give
half a
it an
point.
8.6.
8.6,
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm sticking with the 8.5.
Okay, cool. All
Doesn't get
right,
9 out of 5 because of the wedges.
I think solidly, because like the first episode, we know it's not the best in this, it's not going to be the best in the series. It's always an uphill battle to reacclimatize people, especially after 2 years, and
Yeah, it's been a long
it
break.
fixes the problems. And so, I mean, it would get a 10 if it threw something completely unexpected at me. That's what the saving the 10 for. But honestly, I don't think there's anything that really could have been massively improved by it. I think the blood and cheese was great. I think that it was a good example of how the noises told the story, you know?
Oh God, the noises. Oh, that was some good sound design that was horrendous.
It was, yeah, it was, and
Like,
how the scene itself seemed to scatter. Helena went off in one direction, blood went off in the other direction, cheese was cutting off the head. Like, it sort of dissipated into a little bit of chaos there, and no one really knowing what's going on and stuff. And it's,
and again, like, I think it's a sign of House of the Dragon maturing over how Game of Thrones, where Game of Thrones probably would have shown more unnecessarily. You don't need it. You don't need to see the physical violence against a child in order to get the gist of it. Hearing it was enough, and the content and the meaning is enough, in the same way that you don't need to see Allison's breasts
Exactly.
to
Exactly.
know
Yeah,
whether or
yeah.
not she is having sex. Like, you don't need to see dropping dong or butt cheeks. Like, you know what's happening, and the intimacy of the scene is not lessened by the fact that it's not specifically titillating or gratuitous.
Well, I
Like,
think
you.
the fact that Alison was covered up in the first scene sort of imply it, like it gives it the sneakiness vibe, right?
Yeah.
The like Alison was basically like, lift up the dress, get to work kind of thing. Kristen Cole still took off and carefully laid his cloak down on the side, which again, that
I think that's part of their kink.
yeah, part it tells the story, is yeah. So totally, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really satisfied with that
Nice.
episode.
Cool. Any thoughts, Max?
Okay.
Yeah, I think I give it 8.6. I think
Hey.
they're slightly above the average rating there. It didn't like it was a really good start to the season. It didn't hook me the same way the first episode of season one did,
Okay,
but
yeah.
I do appreciate the tone change and the levity, and yeah.
I mean,
I'm really excited for the rest of the season.
the fact that we can comment on any form of levity in a episode where a child's head gets cut off, it's credit to a show's tone.
Yeah, it would have totally distracted as well. I mean, if you want to see a child's head get cut off, there's always the dark web, right? So, so on that note, shall I? Goodbye. Yeah, we're not. I'm not going to cut the live feed. I'm just going to cut the video. So if you're on YouTube, you're shit out of luck. Toodaloo.
See ya. Bye.